FFL. It's the Football League podcast that's slicker than a Farker first touch. Coming up, goals galore as Ipswich get four and Plymouth hit a six, Middlesbrough win a game, what and Cheltenham got to do to score, and hat tricks for days. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. Here we go again then, gang. Here with you to talk through another exciting weekend of action in the Football League. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin. Clarky, tell me your reaction to that Daniel Farker first touch. Were you like the crowd behind him at Elland Road, rising to your feet and applauding?
Do you know what I was? Yeah, I mean, silently, inwardly, so to speak. But yeah, I was full of admiration. I mean, how happy is he with that? I mean, he just doesn't need to ever try and control another ball again. He's won it, hasn't he? Everyone now thinks he's a proper baller. So yeah, well played Farker. And it was a good win as well, wasn't it, for Leeds? So things are looking up for him and the team.
How hard do you think it was for him, Sam, to act nonchalant after he'd done it and just, yeah, okay, I do that all the time. Let's just carry on the game.
No, I liked his reaction. There was a nice little shrug of the shoulders, whatever type vibe to it. On the weekend, where my old St Johnstone manager, Derek McInnes, now at Kilmarnock, miscontrolled one that was played down the touchline, but he was trying to intercept it because he thought it had gone out of play. Subsequently, red card. Brilliant. And they caned him on the match of the day equivalent up there on Sports Scene last night about the sloppiness of his touch rather than the red card, which I enjoyed.
Well, there you go. Well done, Farker. Things looking up for Leeds, as we say. They won't feature in our weekend review. That's coming up shortly. But first, how about this? Our sponsors, Quinbet, have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, let's get into some of the weekend's games then. Well, only goal difference is keeping Ipswich Town off the top of the championship. The Tractor Boys harvested four more to go in their plus column, but they were still left nervously gnawing nails after allowing Blackburn back into things. McKenna's men had Massimo Luongo to thank for hitting the key goal in the 7 scene at Portman Road. You're getting value for money, Clarky, for your season to get there, aren't you? 39 shots in this game. Ipswich had 29 of them. They're absolutely flying.
They are. Yeah, it's brilliant to see. I've got to say, I've got obviously a massive soft spot for them. It's my home county, and just seeing Portman Road packed to the rafters and watching such good football, watching on from afar, it just really pleases me. It fills me with warmth. We should have known that this would have been a great game. They are two of the most creative, sort of attack heavy teams in the championship, and it didn't disappoint. What surprised me was how little of the ball Ipswich had. Around 40% of the ball. So again, they've shown that they've got different ways of winning matches. What I really like at the moment is the continuity of selection. He's got a big squad full of quality individuals, Kieran McKenna, but he seems to have settled, doesn't he, on favoured units. That midfield, central midfield, it barely ever changes. I was looking at it actually, and 9 players have made at least 7 of the 8 starts already. So yeah, 9 of the 11 are pretty much locked in for Ipswich. And the bench looks very, very strong. Hutchison, Brandon Williams, Harness, Dane Scarlett, Jack Taylor all came on. Freddie Ladapo wasn't even used. The only negative is the goals conceded. And just need to control things a little bit better, I think, structurally, particularly in the games at Portman Road. But yeah, highlight for me was seeing my dad score, Harry Clark smashing one into the top corner. And he's a local boy, and I loved his overexcited celebration. It's the first goal of the game. There's so long left. Yeah, it's like he scored the winner in the World
Great
Cup
finish,
final,
though, to be fair to him.
Yeah,
it?
No, he's brilliant. It was just raw emotion, wasn't it? It was someone that was absolutely buzzing to have scored for Ipswich Town. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? As for Blackburn, pretty good effort. They probably could do with another striker. I mean, there's a lot on Harry Leonard at the moment. He did quite well in this game. Maybe too much was being asked of young Adam Wharton in that sort of sole central midfield position. He was a little bit overwhelmed, I think, by the wave of Ipswich Town attacks. But yeah, I think they've got something to work with, Blackburn. No doubt about it. They create a lot of chances. Just got to be more clinical. And obviously, a little bit more secure at the back than they were in this match and the previous one against Sunderland.
Yeah, back-to-back defeats for them. Three defeats in four. Both these teams at home in the League Cup in midweek. Ipswich against Wolves and Blackburn taking on Cardiff. Just to know who's got the tougher game out of those two. We'll see, I guess. What was the result, listener, that made you go, huh? For me, it was Plymouth Argyle 6, Norwich City 2. Partly because 6-2 is too much like a tennis score for my taste, and partly because WTF is up with Norwich ATM. We'll get to them shortly. But first, here's Stephen Schumacher on his side's bounce back ability.
When Plymouth Argyle play well, it's the whole team have to contribute. We can't carry anyone, and we all have to give 100% effort. As I said earlier on in the week, in the press, every time we've had a poor performance since I've been at this club, we've always had a good reaction because the players that we bring to the club are good people and everyone is has an off day every now and again. But the players responded brilliantly and showed what they were all about today. I think their effort and the commitment to stick to the plan and put the bodies on the line for the shirt was there for all to see. And then when you do that, you get your rewards.
What about this then, Sam? Plymouth scoring 6 goals in a championship match for the first time in more than 36 years, and they were 4-0 up by half-time.
Yeah, just a continuation, I suppose, of Plymouth's incredible ability to win games at home park. That's, you know, 3 from 4 they've won this season in the higher league. And the most interesting thing about this was, yeah, 8 games in, this is the first time we've seen Stephen Schumacher revert to the formation, the style that got them the success last season, the 3-4-2-1 back in essence here after the 4-1 defeat at Bristol City, where there was a lot of question marks about his team selection. 7 changes he made, left out a lot of the main forces in that side that have had them getting so much success. So this was 5 changes, I think, in this game. But, you know, the units back together, Scar at the heart of the defence, Randall and Houghton in the midfield, with Mumba on one side, and obviously Whittaker and Azaz providing the creativity behind Hardy. They've been blessed with some really good number 10s over the years. These two on Saturday, absolutely superb. Probably the individual performance of the weekend, maybe from Whittaker, and maybe the goal of the weekend from Azaz. Absolutely phenomenal skill. Little step over and a drag back, which made Shane Duffy, I think it was, look a little bit foolish. So, yeah, brilliant.
Not going to go for pizzazz from Azaz? No?
I was thinking there, just as I said it, is it Shane Duffy or is that someone out of Boyzone? But it is. That's Keith Duffy, isn't it? It definitely is Shane Duffy. So, yeah, that was a brilliant goal. Really enjoyed it. And similarly to what Clarkie said, actually, 30% possession Plymouth, which I just would never anticipate. I think away from home, they've dominated the ball in the last 3 games, certainly had more possession than the opponent. So this was allowing Norwich to have the ball to a degree, playing probably a little bit more direct. They definitely kicked more from the goalkeeper. At times, the right-sided centre-half was pushing up and they were actually kicking to him. So that's not something I've seen invariably from Plymouth Argyle this season. They want to try and play out, but it's just a little bit of a switch maybe in tactics for this one. And Norwich, yeah, I saw them obviously against Leicester last week. They've lost a little bit of their rhythm, I would say, in terms of their control. And definitely losing Ashley Barnes and Josh Sargent is going to be a big issue. Hwang came in here, lasted 45 minutes. In the previous game, he played Gibbs as a kind of advanced midfielder, number 10. I think that David Wagner got this wrong from the off. And I think making the change at halftime, Adam Forshaw for Hwang, the centre forward, emphasises that they needed a bit more in midfield, an area of the pitch that Plymouth tried to swamp. That was the reason, the main reason for Stephen Schumacher's tactical switch. And I think David Wagner changing at halftime, reinforcing the midfield, pushing Sara forward to get in closer proximity with Adameda is maybe how they should have started the game. But it's a problem for them moving forward because they didn't look creative against Leicester. And again, at the weekend, yes, they've scored 2, which is good for the confidence of Ida. But I think both units defensively and in an attacking sense, Norwich way off where they were a few weeks ago. So big problems for him.
Just taking it back to Plymouth briefly, Morgan Whittaker. I mean, we've all seen managers and teams, we've all let good ones go in the past, but it does make you wonder what Swansea were thinking with their lack of use of Morgan Whittaker. You know, don't want it to be a pile-on for Russell Martin, but, you know, he's a heck of a player. And I think he's proven at Plymouth this season that he's more than good enough to impact games at this level. So, yeah, I think the fact that he didn't get a look in at Swansea and the fact that they were so willing to sell him, he's, it just looks like a really bad bit of business. But it's Plymouth's game because he fits in beautifully to that style of football. And, yeah, it looks a real talent.
I was thinking exactly the same thing on my run this morning, Clarky. How on earth has that been allowed to happen, really? And yeah, just the last point. Hardy, 8 goal involvements now, top in the league. Whittaker, 7. Obviously, Saturday helped, but they got the most creative 2 players right now in the division.
Hat-trick of assists for Ryan Hardy. David Wagner said it was a horrible afternoon, to be fair. I mean, it was a horrible day because it's a 12-hour round trip from Norwich to Plymouth. So a lot of time to dwell on that on the coach home for those Canaries. Oh,
yeah, they won't be getting the coach. They wouldn't have been getting the coach.
Well, the fans will. It probably took them longer than 12 hours, in fairness.
True.
Speaking of long away days, Middlesbrough finally did a win. Carrick's compadres no doubt grateful to see leaky Southampton rock up at the Riverside on Saturday. For once, the Saints didn't dominate possession, but they still lost anyway, despite taking the lead. Adam Armstrong put them ahead. Riley McGree just before the break, and Johnny Howson midway through the second half. A bit of a switcheroo in the managerial pressure stakes, maybe then, Clarkey. Big relief this for Michael Carrick, but it gets worse for Russell Martin, who is kind of blaming, oh, well, you know, it's been a rotten 18 months and all this stuff happened last season. I didn't realise how bad it was. Not me, Gov, kind of
approach.
Hang on, approach.
Didn't Nathan Jones say that? I mean, you can't keep, every manager can't keep saying that, can they? Let's focus on Borough and the positives there. Michael Carrick went back to the old school. That's basically what he did here. Only 3 of his starting 11 were new signings. So, you know, the bulk of this group were with him last year, a lot of whom have been on the bench in the early weeks. And I think sometimes there is that temptation with new signings to just put them straight in. But when they're young and when they're inexperienced, like the bulk of Borough's new faces are, it's pretty unfair to stick them straight in. I'd say counterproductive. Drip feed it, you know, give them a little bit of experience, but have some continuity from last season. And I think that's the realization that they had this week. That was what was behind their thinking in the starting 11, and it paid off. It really did. Isaiah Jones was great, scored a terrific goal. Riley McGree, who I was really surprised to see on the bench in the first few games. He was excellent in the game, pressing, working really hard to win the ball back, which is what you got to do against Southampton, and then driving forward with real pace and penetration. And yeah, it's so well done to Middlesbrough. They rediscovered themselves, and they didn't. It wasn't an ideal 11. They had to put, I think, Lewis O'Brien at left back. Lath didn't play. So they brought in Josh Coburn, who did brilliantly. I can't believe I think he's still only 20. I think he's around 20. And he's a big old unit, but played superbly. Held it, travelled with the ball, linked with others, and carried a threat as well. So there's talk now of maybe partnering Coburn with Lath moving forward. And I'd quite like to see that. I think between them, the two, could be quite a handful. So, a much, much better day for Carrick and for Middlesbrough. Not so for Russell Martin. It's just not going well, is it? I think the issue is the damage done psychologically from those heavy defeats is impacting them greatly, because if ever there was a style of football where you have to be super confident, it's Russell Martin's. And if you've got any doubt, any self-doubt or nerves or apprehension about receiving a ball, you're in trouble in that team. And I think it's understandable that the players might be apprehensive, because mistakes have been made, defeats have happened, and everyone's on their back. So it's not going to be easy to turn around just like that. And obviously bad starts for a lot of the new signings. Holgate makes a mistake for 1 goal again. It's not his first. And Howard Bellis, I mean, it's laughable that he's protesting about the penalty. I mean, he pulled the player down clearly. And that's a couple of errors he's made. So, it's been a horrible few weeks for Southampton.
Well, Borough go to Bradford in the Cup, so a good chance for them to get back-to-back wins. Saints next three, Leeds at home, Stoke away, Rotherham at home. You feel they probably need to win at least one of those for Russell Martin's sake. All right, finally in the Championship, it is time for me to wheel out the old Tale of Two Cities line. The cities in this instance being those of Stoke and Hull, who met in the Potteries on Sunday. Liam's lads besting Alex's Army by 3-1.
Slater, deflection! And it compounds Stoke City's misery. Amber Nectar, though, for Hull.
And they're up to fourth, Sam. This is incredible. We can focus on the boos from the Stoke fans later if you like, but we ought to start by praising Liam Rossini and what he's done with Hull this season.
Yeah, I was going to say when Clarkey was talking about Russell Martin blaming previous regimes or whatever and Nathan Jones, it's kind of the Stoke syndrome, isn't it? I think we've had that for the last decade, haven't we? Managers coming in, it's the aftermath of the Premier League years, the wages, the lads, some of the lads just don't want to be here. So yeah, still going on, still the problem. I think he's got a new squad now, isn't he, Alex Neil? So he can't hide behind that one anymore. But really impressive from Hull. Third straight away win, 7 unbeaten, as you said, Matt. And I think it's been built on a solid defence. You know, a lot of this success under Liam Rossini, conceded 4 in the last 6 games. They conceded a couple in the opening couple of games of the season, but since then they've been pretty watertight. Slightly different system for this game. Regan Slater has been a defensive midfielder, give or take, for Liam Rossini, and previously wide left in this game. And it was Seri and Tyler Morton who kind of dictated the pace of this game. Morton was on loan at Blackburn last year from Liverpool. Him and Seri, really good ball retention, progressing it up the pitch when they wanted to keep it. I thought, interestingly, a couple of the goals came from quite direct balls, one from the goalkeeper. So that variation that maybe we've spoken about that's been lacking in certain other Championship teams, that was evident from Hull going back to front. Connolly is a live wire at the moment. He's 4 in 5, averaging over a goal per 90. It's actually the best in the league apart from Ladapo, who's a strange customer, isn't he? I was thinking about that when Clarkey was talking about him earlier. Always notches, never gets a game. Very odd. But yeah, Connolly's really at it. And this victory, I thought, was ever more impressive because there's no Toufan and Liam Rossini rotated for this game. No Delap. Scott Twiney's not hit his level yet on the bench as well. So they got really good ammunition going forward. We spoke about Philogene, who provided an assist here. He's going to be a really good sign and he's only going to get better. So this was a very, very impressive performance. I thought for 70 minutes, it was a bit of a canter. Stoke improved, I think, when Wesley came on, gave them a bit of a presence that actually troubled the two whole centre-halves latterly. But 70 minutes, a bit of a canter, 20 minutes at 3-0 up. Yeah, stroking it around like it was a pre-season friendly. So very, very dominant. And for Alex Neil and for Stoke, so much early season promise, so much so that I think we waxed lyrical about the first couple of wins. The system is changing. Back three here. Daniel Johnson, left wing back. At one stage, there was two wingers leading the line until Wesley came on. So still scratching around. You can say it's early days and you can say that some of the new players have shown promise, but where they're sitting currently, there's going to be pressure and there's going to be noise. And, you know, hopefully he can turn it around because I think there's a good manager there. I think he's a good manager. But at the moment, he, you know, that continuity with selection and performance, miles away.
Lots of tough gigs in the Championship. You might have Huddersfield down as one of those. Adrian, they've appointed Darren Moore. His first game in charge is tonight as we record when they play at Coventry. This is a real test of Darren Moore, isn't it? Because he got the sympathy vote, having got ditched by Sheffield Wednesday after getting them up. He's been relegated from the Championship before. I guess we're going to see what he's really made of now.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this will be a crossroads appointment in terms of his career. Because if it goes badly, then his stock will have fallen quite dramatically, and yeah, he might find it tougher to get these decent gigs. But yeah, I think he's done well to get the job, if I'm being honest. Even though I felt that he should have been given the opportunity to stay at Sheffield Wednesday this season, I don't think his team would have been that competitive, and we've seen how they've struggled anyway. So my hunch is that if he'd have stayed, he'd have already been sacked by now, and that he'd be maybe looking for another job. So it's worked out okay for him. It's a tough gig. They don't have a great squad, Huddersfield Town. I think that Neil Warnock was getting quite a lot out of them, if I'm honest, even this season. And if he can keep them up, then that's mission accomplished. But I don't think it will be easy to keep Huddersfield up this season, because I look around the division and I see a lot of squads that are significantly stronger. And I think Sam's with me on this. I'm not completely convinced in Darren Moore. I know his reputation is good. A lot of that is because he's such a nice guy, such a good bloke. But tactically, have my reservations, and he'll need to be tactically good working with a squad that might be inferior to a lot of their opponents this season. You've got to box smart. Would I be able to do that? Let's see.
So he's got Coventry Monday night, Sam, then host Ipswich away to Birmingham. Not easy games. The one after that, of course, it's at Hillsborough. He'll want to win that for obvious reasons, but actually that's a six-pointer.
Yeah, I would imagine that there's going to be rumblings about the Sheffield Wednesday manager's job as well, because how safe is that one going to be? I think there's probably reservations about him tactically as well. There's been a big turnaround, I suppose, in the squad. He's fitted between old and new to a degree so far this season, and that was a real painful defeat against Swansea, who just couldn't buy a win, could they? So that was probably a must win for Michael Duff, and they got it done convincingly. So yeah, that will be interesting. Nunez is still the gaffer when we come to that game. This is quite a nice game, I would suggest, for Darren Moore tonight. I say a nice game, or Coventry in poor form, actually. So there's an opportunity for them to get something. But yeah, I agree with Clarkey. What I will say, I was thinking about it the other day, he's taken his whole backroom team with him, in essence. I think they've had a whole clear at Huddersfield, or more to the point, Darren Moore's been afforded the opportunity to bring in his guys. So, you know, that's a bit of a collective, do you think, Clarkey? Like, tactically evolving, you know, maybe being a little bit more productive in that manner in the Championship, where you can't maybe rely on your better players to get you out of the mire, which I think he certainly had to rely on in League One. I think this year, if he is going to be a success, then he's going to have to show that side to his management.
Well, we shall see. Good luck to Darren Moore. We'll check in with him maybe in a couple of weeks' time, see how he's getting on. Next today, though, we're going to head to League One. Michael Appleton's first home game in charge of Charlton saw a happy valley as the Addicts ended Wickham's five-match unbeaten run in the league. 3-1 the score here. It's been a good start, Sam, for him after that late point they pinched at Stevenage last weekend.
Yeah, really good. Two, I would say, very tricky games. Maybe, a few similarities. Certainly the power that Wickham have still. I know that's a different style that Matt Bloomfield is trying to get into his players, but they've still got that big threat from set pieces, physicality. And I think that Charlton at 1-1 really had to dig in here in the second half. And it was actually some inspired substitutions that got the business done. Tenno Watson and Tedic, who was at Barnsley last year, if you remember, they combined for a goal 2 minutes after both of them came on in a double switch. So that really went for him at the weekend. I thought the setup was quite interesting as well. Partly forced, four centre-halves he's fielding at the moment. And maybe not the worst day to have that physicality, as I said. But I think Michael Appleton, knowing his teams previously, Oxford and Lincoln, he'll want a little bit more attacking impetus from the fullbacks when everyone's available. So that will improve. I think because of Wickham's high energy, I think Michael Appleton said as much, the ability to close from the outset. I think they wanted Leeburn as an avenue for them on the diagonal. He played wide. I think that probably emphasises as well that it's quite difficult for Charlton to fit in all their forward players into a system, because you want Leeburn and Alfie May maybe, but tricky to do that if you're playing a back four. He played wide right. Corey Blackett-Taylor played wide left, and he capped the victory with a brilliant individual goal at the end. So, really good day. I don't envisage Charlton flying up the table, but I think they've got more than enough to be top half there's a lot of players to come back yet from injury. So, yeah, it's a nice blank canvas, I suppose. Has Charlton ever been called a blank canvas? But you know what I mean. I think this is a nice job for Michael Appleton to get his teeth into this season and potentially challenge next year. Wickham, they will play worse than this and win. I think this was a decent display for them, just done by, as I said, some good tactical changes from the home manager and a couple of late excellent goals. So it's been a really good run. I think four wins in five coming into this game. It's been a pretty good turnaround for them.
Well, I mean, a pretty good turnaround for them, not so much for Cheltenham. Stark contrast in the starts of the season made by them and Stevenage. Borough only a point off the table, whilst Cheltenham, who sacked Wade Elliott in the week, have now gone more than 13 and a half hours without a League One goal this season. Stevenage rubbed their noses in it by scoring three at the completely Suzuki, two of them from Elliott List.
Into the corner, towards Piergiani, dropping down, still dangerous! Go two in the lead, but what a massive moment that is for Elliott List. His first of the season, his first since May 2022. Horrible injuries for Elliott List. And now he's back on the score sheet, and Stevenage are surely going to get 3 points here.
Those were List's first goals since recovering from the ACL injury that kept him out for all but 39 minutes of last season. A good news story for him then, Clarkie, but Cheltenham, crikey, first team in Football League history to fail to score in their opening nine league games of a season. You can see why they made the managerial change.
You can, yeah. I mean, yeah, it had to happen, I guess. How they cure this is, I don't know, because it's clearly in the players' heads now, isn't it? And your confidence when you know that you're so short on firepower, it heaps so much pressure on the rest of the team. So bad times for Cheltenham. Obviously, all nine league games they've blanked. They blanked in the game I was at against Birmingham in the Carabao Cup, but they did score in the EFL Trophy. But it was an own goal, so we still haven't had a goal scorer at the club, which is just quite remarkable, really. And they've used 27 players already. Wouldn't surprise me if they soon get to 30 plus, because they've just got to keep trying something until the formula clicks. The standing gaffer, Kevin Russell here, who was assistant to Wade Elliott, he did change things. They moved away from the back three, which they've had every week until this point. Went 4-4-2, was a 4-4-2 diamond. They started playing out from the back a little bit more, trying to shorten things up, go through the thirds. And by all accounts, they played okay. And they were neat and tidy. But Stevenage is so strong. They're so organised. They're so powerful. And by the end of the game, I think the shot count tells its story. The hosts had 9 shots, Stevenage 21. Shots on target, 2. Stevenage had 9. You know, so I don't just think it's down to a lack of punch in attack. I think all over the pitch, Cheltenham are struggling at the moment. So yeah, look, bad times for them, but for my old club, brilliant. Two more set piece goals at 7 now for Stevenage. If they're going to challenge for promotion this season, you know they're going to have to score lots from set plays. But it's at the back that they really impressed me. Joint best defensive record in the league alongside Portsmouth. Only let in 6. You know, we're nearly in October. That's mightily impressive for a club of Stevenage's size when you consider the stature of some of the opponents they're facing week in, week out. And when you think that they signed way over 10 players in the summer, 6 of them, 6 new players were in this starting 11, a few of them at the back, including the keeper. So, you know, this is a new team. It's a kind of like a brand new side. Elliott List, been out for over a year. So many new faces, yet so cohesive and so well organised. So, yeah, Steve Evans and the coaching staff are doing an absolutely blinding job, aren't they, at the moment? And don't think they're going to fall off a cliff any day soon. I think they're going to continue grinding out these impressive results.
Looking at the odds for the next Cheltenham manager, Dave Artell and Dean Holden amongst the front runners, absolutely reeks of Steve Cottrell to me.
He's turned it down.
Has he?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I thought that he would be the person they'd turn to. Sam, have you got some insider info that you can give us as to who might take it?
Just from an article I literally just finished reading, Dave Artell was in the stand with notepad and pen in hand. So
imagine if he just did it, like just not, he wasn't invited. He's just
pick me. got a pad. I think he was down to the last two or three for the Swindon job. If you remember, I think it was when Jody Morris got it. It looked at one point nailed on for that job. So he's been, he's been a name around quite a few gigs at that level.
It does crack me up how quickly out-of-work managers slap their CVs in. Do you know what I mean? The
Lee Johnson last week we were talking about, weren't we?
Yeah, by all accounts, these chairmen or owners, they're inundated like within half a day. It's a very competitive business, isn't it?
Anything else, Adrian, that stood out to you in League One?
A few things, actually. I won't say them all. First up, two amazing goals for Barnsley. Well played. First of all, Devontae Cole, 80-yard run, and then sticks it top bin. So well played him. That was brilliant. But I think it wasn't the best goal of the game.
One was superb, wasn't it?
The Callum Styles one. So if anyone hasn't seen it, the goalkeeper sort of had to come to the byline, but I don't know, 10 yards along. So he's way out of his own goal. He's cleared it to Styles, who's on the left wing, and he just hits it first time side foot into the empty net. It is unbelievably good from Callum Styles. So yeah, those were the highlights in terms of the quality of goals. I wanted to say something about League One's League One's interest in jazzing up the goal net, and I'm all over this. Port Vale have gone for the black netting, which I commend them for, because it's so boring, isn't it? Everyone's got the box nets these days. They're all white. There's just no individuality. So I'm delighted that Port Vale have gone with the black netting this season. And I noticed that Oxford have gone for a yellow trim around the back, around the base of the net. And they've gone for yellow and blue stripes on the back posts. So yeah, I know it's not a big deal. I know it's not tactically interesting, but I'm all over clubs just, you know, showing a little bit of personality with their goal nets. It's important, right?
Definitely a nice goal or net wanted me to find it.
Yes.
You know, during the warm-up. I'd do a little bit of visualization towards the end of my career, funnily enough, because I never scored in the last like 5 years. But yeah, I did used to like a nice net. What's the best goal, best net ever? You can't have the old Wembley. What about the Dell?
I was thinking of the Dell, but it's too springy for
me. They were weird, weren't they?
Yeah, the ball just bounced out too quickly. You couldn't appreciate it. I always liked it. I mean, I'm going to use the word stanchion just because we don't get nearly enough chance to do that these days. But when you had those like triangular stanchiony things in the corner, if you could get the ball stuck in that my head, that's the ultimate goal.
It was Palace, the ultimate. Yeah.
Palace 2-1 game at Molineux.
Really?
2-1 game. One of them stuck there. I think it might have been Chris Armstrong. I've almost got the name of the other chap. It was a left foot. He was a midfielder. It got like stuck in there just like momentarily and then fell out. Yeah. It might have been Pitcher. That was a player, wasn't it, Clarkey?
Yeah, Pitcher. Yeah. Played against him many times. From yesteryear, I just love the individuality of goal nets in the past. But for me, it was the ones that drooped down when then the ball hit it. It would just bulge the back, but then stay in there and just sort of die in there. That was, for me, was the best. These just go too far back, these box type goals, goal netting. I think we could do a whole pod on goal nettings of yesteryear. Fantastic.
I'm up for it. Yeah. It was Clive Allen, wasn't it? Was that for Palace where he scored and the goal got disallowed because the ref thought it just hit the post and come back out again because the net was so taut. Remember that being on a Danny Baker video. Good stuff. Good content. We'll have to move on to League Two, though. And Notts County are top of it. This after a ding-dong at Meadow Lane, where for the first time in a long time, the Magpies welcomed Forest for a league game. Forest Green, of course. Troy Deeney took home the match ball, if not any points, as the Magpies ran out 4-3 winners. Their manager, Luke Williams, wasn't over the moon when he spoke to BBC Radio Nottingham.
Many congratulations. You're top of the table. You've got 3 points, but what an extraordinary afternoon. How do you sum all that up?
I didn't enjoy it at all, not one bit, because Forest Green are very good. So then when you're 2 goals in front midway through the game, it doesn't matter if they're very good for the level. You need to be able to control the game better. And instead, it was dreadful.
I should just say that he did go on to praise his players, at least to some degree, in there. It's been a great start to the season for them, Adrian. And as we suspected, David McGoldrick has proved to be a really astute signing.
Yeah, he's a class player. He's knocking on a bit, but he doesn't look it, does he? He still seems really, really sharp. Got a nice goal to put the gloss on the win at the end. And yeah, he was influential. Brilliant ball into the box for the second goal for Macaulay Langstaff. And yeah, they've kind of went with a box midfield. So 3-4-2-1. Yeah, that's what it was, with Dan Crowley and McGoldrick sort of in support of Langstaff and the other two in behind. And yeah, that's pretty strong. They scored some nice goals. Nice to see Dan Crowley score another header from a Jody Jones cross. That's happened before this season. So that's a good combo, sort of one winger to an attacking midfielder at the far stick. So yeah, look, the manager wasn't happy because they lost control of the game. But ultimately, you score four at home. You can't be too disappointed. It certainly wasn't dreadful. I think he did use the word dreadful in some of his post-match comments. I don't think it was really that bad. Forest Green, I don't think were dreadful either. And I do think that they're making a little bit of progress under David Horseman. He is he's changing the football. I think it's a little bit better. They're playing through the thirds. In this match, he changed the system as a sort of sign of respect, I think, towards Notts County. He went with a three in midfield with one in front. So basically a diamond, just because he knew that County would play through them for fun if he didn't do something different from the 4-4-2 that they have been playing. So yeah, Forest Green changed things up and were competitive. And obviously it was nice for Deeney to get a hat trick. I mean, the second goal, I'm not quite sure, Sam, how a couple of his teammates didn't get a touch on it. He sort of hooked one on the volley and it dribbled in, didn't it? And two or three of his
Would be my guess.
Yeah, maybe that. It looked to me as if they sort of air-shotted it. It was very lucky that he got it. But yeah, in defeat, Forest Green have credit. I think away from home, that this was their first defeat away from home. I think away from home, they're fine, which is really positive. It's just at their own ground, they've lost all five. Been really, really bad at home. So got to sort that out. And once they do, they'll climb the table, because I actually think that they're a much better team right now than they were under Big Dunk.
Opta pointing out that Deeney is the first player to score three or more goals and end up on the losing side in a match across the top four tiers in England since Fajiri Okunebere in January 2019. Was Deeney's first hat-trick in 9 years. More from him later. Here's Wrexham's co-owner, Rob McElhenney, tweeting at halftime of Saturday's game at Stockport with his team 3-0 down. Phil's enthusiasm in the locker room will be off the charts, but never, ever leave a Wrexham game. Come on, you Reds. If anyone did leave the away end early, they'd have missed two more Stockport goals. It's not the tweet of the week, Sam, but he does get a couple of minus points for using locker room instead of dressing room. Stockport, we were waiting for them to get their season off and running. They've really done it now, haven't they? Three wins on the spin, and this one as comprehensive as they come.
Yeah, tough games as well, away at AFC Wimbledon, who hadn't been beaten, and the much improved, or certainly have shown a lot of promise in some games, MK Dons, and now Wrexham. So yeah, brilliant return to form. Similarities, I suppose, to last season, although it didn't really start motoring probably until the winter set in. And if you remember, probably the last time we discussed Stockport, it was about the back three and how there were two fullbacks playing either side of an out-and-out centre-half. Well, he ditched that after the Crawley game, and these three wins have come with a back four. So he's changed the system, I think partly down to injury. I know Kyle Noyle wasn't available for this one. I think Touré did play. But yeah, I think circumstantially, he's been forced a little bit into changing, and it's paid off in a big way. Still got Callum Camps, Powell, Wootton, all to come back in, who weren't available at the weekend. So the squad is strong. I think the midfield's looking really good now with Collar, Crowsdale, Sarsavich, a lot of the guys we spoke about last year. So more solid, and I think real pace in attack. So a bit different in that regard as well. They can be a bit longer in terms of their distribution. And I think that was a bit of a tactic at the weekend. Wrexham do like to close, and I think that they were kind of allowing, enticing that pressure and then going a little bit longer to Olafe and Louis Barry, who are really quick, really sharp, helped themselves to a I think four goals between them. Louis Barry's had a really good start to the season. Normally a wide player. He's playing down the middle. So, yeah, bit of a change, maybe certainly in terms of the shape, maybe a little bit tactically as well. But, yeah, Stockport on a roll. Wrexham shouldn't be too despondent. That's the first defeat in the league since that opening day kind of thumping from MK Dons, or it was certainly load of goals in the game, wasn't it? And Paul Mullen looking a little rusty. I think that's his third appearance maybe since he came back, yet to get up and running with a goal. So they'll be back to it, I'm sure, but they won't want too many afternoons like this, because now I think only Sutton conceded more in the division. Yeah, 21 to Wrexham's 20. Need to shore things up defensively.
Anything else we should be talking about in League Two, Adrian? Loads of goals around this weekend, weren't there? Including a 96-minute winner for Crawley, I note.
Yes, on the subject of Crawley, Liam Kelly, the no-celebration chip. they were 2-0 down, of course, in this game at Grimsby, and he got the first one of the three. So I guess that's part of it, but it was a glorious chip. I mean, some cynics might say it was a mishit cross, but if he meant it, it was magnificent. And he just literally turned around and jogged back, which I commend him for. But yeah, Ben Close, we've got to mention him. I think rightly labelled his winner at Forest Green a cross. This wasn't a cross. Absolute scorcher to win the game for Donny against Gillingham. Brilliant goal. And he deserves all the credit that anyone can give him for that one, because it was magnificent.
Yeah, not a win that many people saw coming either, I don't think. Sam, Johnny Jackson, he's your Bezzy. They're doing really well again, aren't they, Wimbledon? On the fringes of the playoff places now after a win against Walsall. They needed that after a few too many draws of late. But things looking up for the Wombles?
Yeah, it's been a brilliant start to the season, and would be absolutely, I know he was absolutely thrilled with this win. It was a really good equaliser from Freddie Draper when they were already down to 10 Walsall. So they got it back to 1-1. And I think it'll be so thrilled for Al Hamady, who obviously missed a couple of penalties early part of the season, did score when he was away with Iraq recently. Annoyingly for Jacko, from a penalty, I think it was. So he's come back maybe a bit more confidence, and he scored a brilliant goal to cap it, cutting in on his left foot and stinging one past the goalkeeper. So yeah, I think they're up to eighth maybe now, Wimbledon. Let me just have a little look. Yeah, it's been a really good start to the season. And as I've said on previous pods, chalk and cheese to last season when they were so kind of youthful and so naive because of circumstances towards the end of the campaign. So yeah, really good start to the season, and yeah, long may it continue.
Yeah, League Two is going to be fun this season by the looks of it. 8 points separating the leaders Notts and Barrow in 13. Okay, we're going to whip through some scouting reports next. It is a welcome return for this feature, albeit, Clarkie, I feel like you've handed me a bit of a hospital pass here, so I'm just going to put it straight back to you and say you can pronounce the name of this Preston player who's caught your eye.
Milutin Osmajic. There you go. he is Preston North End's new centre forward. And I was at the game, Rotherham against Preston at the weekend. And yeah, he really caught my eye. It's obviously a small sample size. He only had three starts. So I don't really have any great stats to throw at you on this, apart from his pass accuracy. And because that's what stood out to me. He was brilliant at holding the ball up. So he backs into centre halves and says, get off. And he links it really crisply. And I would have loved to have played with a centre forward like this, because, you know, as an attacking midfield player, that's what you need. You need that platform at the top. And he worked so hard to put himself in a position where he could chauffeur the ball back into a defender, hold it up, lay it off, and then spin and let the team counter. And Preston did it on numerous occasions in the game. And it was, you know, a lot of it was down to him. Spoke to Ryan Lowe afterwards and asked him about him. And the word he used was, he's a machine. And that's, I think that's the kind of praise that the player himself would be very, very happy with, because he's a strong, powerful boy. So yeah, he just needs to score more goals. He's got one already. But in this game, he missed a couple, had a rebound that was well saved. He had a far post header that he probably should have scored. And I remember from the previous home game at Deepdale, he had a far post header that was brilliantly saved. So he's just got to work on those, but he's getting into the positions. And And I think that they've got themselves a decent player. He's a Montenegro international. And when we continued our conversation about him, he said, yeah, all he needs, apart from to learn better English, he said, all he needs is players closer to him. He said he needs a bit more around him. So I think when Will Keane, who's the leading scorer, is fit and available, I think he'll play just off Osmajic. And together, they could be quite a handful. Just look out for the name. I think he's a player that has hit the ground running and made quite the impression. Preston in recent years have had big target men that really didn't stretch teams that much. This is a big target man who can also go the other way. He can run the channels and get in beyond as well as do the donkey work. So, yeah, I think he looks a good piece of recruitment.
I read some comments from Ryan Lowe leading into the weekend's game, and he said that Osmajic got one of the backroom staff got him in a headlock or in some form of hold or something, and Osmajic, right. And this guy's supposed to be quite handy or whatever, or I don't know what his background is, and Osmajic just absolutely beasted him. So Ryan Lowe was like, yeah, this geezer's going to be an absolute handful. Basically, I'm loving that the hijinks of a kit man still wrestling the players still goes on. Yeah, tremendous.
Magnificent. Yeah, Kit, that's what kitmen are there for, apart from laying out kit and washing it. They're there for those moments, aren't they? They always think they're a little bit tasty. They can handle themselves as well. So
I think it was someone more on the sports science or fitness side of things, but you know, my sentiment remains. Yeah, backroom staff arm wrestling the left winger. Perfect.
Yeah, I'm all over that.
All right, so that's Preston's new Montenegrin front man. Sam, you've gone for a youngster impressing at Leicester. And I know he's been highly touted by some people who really know what they're talking about in the game.
Well, you said something nice about him, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to go for someone that I've seen in the flesh last couple of weeks. And obviously I saw Leicester on two occasions prior to their win against Bristol City. And he stood out. And I remember seeing him for AFC Wimbledon against Walsall back end of last year. He didn't stand out, to be honest, at League Two. So this has been an incredible start to the season. I think he has recognised that dropping into the Championship, this is his time. What an opportunity for him that he wouldn't have been afforded if they were still in the Premier League, quite frankly. So good on him. I think he's a really strong runner.
This is Casey McAteer, by the way. We haven't said his name yet. So.
Oh, why haven't we said his name?
No.
Sorry, mate. You're supposed to do that. Lead me in. he's a good runner, powerful runner, two good feet. I think emphasised by, scoring off both sides so far this season. The brilliant goal at Rotherham when he chopped in from the right onto his left side and bent one into the far corner. He's got a header as well in that same game, getting in on the far post, which I think is a big part of his job. Love his enthusiasm. Like I said, just this opportunity that's been afforded to him. And I think in the Leicester setup, when especially Iheanacho's in the team, I spoke about it, I think, on last week's pod, going short and linking the play. I think the two wide guys are really important to penetrate behind and make clever runs. And the defensive players, Vestergaard and Doyle, can play a little bit longer. They try and get him in, especially Doyle from left to right. There was one pass at Carrow Road, which he plucked out of the sky on the touchline. Absolutely amazing ability. So he's got quite a lot in this in his armoury. One other little thing I wanted to flag, a bit more tactically minded. I thought Clarkie might be interested in this. In the game at Norwich, Choudhury was the right back, so playing on McAteer's side. But because he was playing as the nominal inverted one going into midfield, McAteer had so much of the ball. So many touches in dangerous areas. And when against Southampton, Pereira on the left-hand side played inverted, Mavididi on the left had loads of touches and loads more of the ball. So it must be a product of that setup, which frees up the touchline basically for either McAteer or Mavididi on the other role to have the absolute freedom to get on the ball, when it probably draws players away as well. Would that be right, Clarkie?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen it with my own eyes with Arsenal this season when Thomas Partey did it. Okay, so Thomas Partey was coming in from right back, wasn't he, the first couple of games. And Bukayo Saka had a ridiculous amount of touches in those games. And it's because I think it frees up the space. So it's less of a cluttered area out wide. So instead of maybe needing two passes to get to Saka or to McAteer, with Choudhury, you've got that. It opens up an avenue for that where you can just hit someone earlier with a crisp pass that gets them 1v1. Because you've got to remember that Choudhury has brought someone in. Okay, so let's imagine that McAteer had his fullback marking him and the left winger sat in front. Well, that left winger sat in front has to go in with Choudhury to go and engage. Otherwise, he can do what he likes. And it frees up the 1v1s. And I think that is absolutely the reason why managers are trying this out. And yeah, it's good. It's good for wingers. I'd have liked it, that's for sure.
My best bit of analysis from the season, I said, oh, I'm not sure about Choudhury playing right back and inverting because Jonathan Rowe, he started the season unbelievable for Norwich. Oh, it's going to be tricky for Choudhury. Absolutely cruised it. Like literally played in his slippers. Yeah. So, but anyway, back to McAteer. Really good start to the season and good on him. What a good story.
Leicester absolutely flying at the moment, as are Preston. So that is Milutin Osmajić and Casey McAteer, the subjects of this week's scouting reports. Right. Before we go, a tweet of the week. It comes from the aforementioned Troy Deeney at @T_Deeney, who says, weird feelings after that game, but thought at official NCFC are a proper outfit. Very good game of football, both attacking teams. Great advert for league. Hope everybody has a good weekend. It's that last bit, Sam, that really does it for me. It's not enjoy your weekend, Rovers, because they lost or whatever, but just hope everybody has a good weekend. That's what we need more of in this world.
There's a lot to get my teeth into here. I think I've sat on the fence a little bit too much in recent weeks. Weird feeling after that game. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's now doing some coaching. Is he not? Because I am saying Troy Deeney and the old me, listen, I've scored a hat trick away from home. The result is irrelevant, my friend. You're going home with a match ball. You might as well have lost 23.
He is the coach now.
So I think that probably that feeling's probably tempered somewhat. And the collective is more important than maybe it once was to Troy. I really like proper outfit. I mean, that's football cliches, isn't it? But it's good. I like it. It's just a nice phrase. And it's nice that he's, you know, commended the opponent. And they clearly are a really good team as well. The last bit I could do without. But, you know, I like Troy. Had a lot of fun in his company when we played together. So I'm going to give him a bit of a pass. But yeah, some nice stuff and some not so nice. Clarkie?
So Clarkie, he praises Notts, which means that the replies are basically all sycophantic Notts fans saying, oh, you did so well today, rah, rah, rah. Enjoyed this, though, from Wendy Patrick. I said to my cousin that you were rubbish. Shows what I know about football.
That should be tweet of the week. It's like a sort of rambler. He's just getting his thoughts off his chest. It's a little bit of a ramble. The punctuation is poor on Troy's part, but he's a footballer. He's not a writer, is he? So we can let him off the hook there. I think it's a generous tweet. It's easy to be generous when you just bag the match ball, as Sam said.
He's not a writer, but he is a podcaster, aren't they all these days, footballers? Right, that came on Twitter/X. I'm still going Twitter, sorry. I can't get my head around X. How can people follow us there and elsewhere, Adrian?
Well, I might go on Thread soon, that is for sure. I think we should probably do an account on there. It is a nightmare, this X business. It's getting tougher and tougher for people to find us or find you, whoever you are. It's just at EFL What The on X. As I said, we might set up a Threads account this week, which will be What The EFL, as it is on Instagram and TikTok. It's just at What The EFL. Been a bit slack last week. I was just really, really busy. Didn't really have much of a spare moment. So it was a bit light on content. Must do better. And hopefully this week I will.
We'll see if we can get Wendy and her cousin to run the account, take it over for a couple of days, maybe. Yeah. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can drop us a nice review on iTunes or
send
Spotify.
Us some money. Yeah.
I mean, that's more than welcome. Yeah, just send it to me and I'll pass some of it on to the boys, I promise. But no, thank you to everybody who has left us nice reviews on iTunes and Spotify. It really helps other people find the podcast and it gives us a little boost as well. Before we go, one final reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, that'll do it for this week then. We'll be back with more of the same next week. Join us for that if you can. Until then, have a great week. Bye for now.